So let's get started, I guess. Take number one. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Odd Testament podcast, episode number one.
Come
numero
on.
Uno. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Eric.
Should I pause enough?
Yeah. Even longer.
Even longer. Okay. So yeah. I'm Greg. Okay.
Awesome. And this is a place where we're going to dive into odd, strange, weird stories, curious stories from the Bible. Whether you're here for like a fresh perspective, or maybe you're just here to explore a weird side of faith, like you're in the right place. So we want to say welcome. Thanks for joining us today. We have I would say a pretty long history. 20 years is pretty long, right, guys?
Yeah, yeah. Long enough. Yeah,
that crazy.
Yeah, 20 years. So I was thinking about it. Just like, I can't, oh gosh, I was getting my hair cut this week, and I was sitting in the barber shop, or, you know, in the chair. And the guy next to me was talking about, you know, his birthday's coming up, and how old are you going to be? I'm getting ready to be 20. And the barber, who's like 26, is like, man, you're making me feel old. And I'm like, my 40th birthday is coming up. I feel old. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's nuts how fast time goes by. I can't believe it's been 20 years.
It's a blur. Ryan, I remember like hanging out in your apartment, listening to Flight of the Conchords, and like, and you would pick up your guitar and like try to riff on it. And then with Ricky, and like, man, those are the good old days. Like
the good old days,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. Good stuff.
Hope it helps. Well, I just turned 54.
54.
Yeah.
And wow. And can you smell the grave? Like, is it close enough that it's wafting through?
Yeah. I'm over the hill. There's no question. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah. Just try not to trip.
Yeah. Because if I do, I'm not getting back up. You know, I don't even have one of those buttons that you push when you fall in and can't get up. I'm not quite that old, but yeah, anything. It's all dangerous.
Does the VA cover a Rascal scooter?
They might. They might.
Yes. That's perfect. So good. Guys, I limped into church today on crutches because I need knee surgery.
Okay.
Did I tell you guys this?
I
hurt my knee end of November playing ping pong. That's how old I'm getting.
Yeah.
Playing ping pong. Hurt my knee.
Not to have in high school. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Even pickleball. Like it goes tennis, pickleball, ping pong.
Yeah.
And it's that lowest. I once sprained my ankle playing football, but not cool. Like it wasn't, I, you know, reached up, got a pass. I missed a pass. And so then was running to go get the ball and then popped my ankle and sprained it. And I was so mad because I already look like I can't play sports, but not only did I miss the catch, but then just walking, like not even playing, that's when I got my football injury.
Yeah.
And my life's hard. And that's the perspective I want to bring to the podcast here.
Yeah.
Yes,
for me, my weirdest, dumbest injury was playing soccer with my youngest son. Not even playing. We were just passing back and forth. And I just kicked the ball to him, felt a little twinge, and then took another step and went, or I said, no, I'm okay. Not a big deal. And then touched it one more time, went, nope, I'm done. Pulled my groin. I barely moved, and it black and blue, the whole deal, out for weeks of just joy. Just pure joy.
Wow. Man, I like this. I like this talking about injuries thing. We should make this a normal part of what we talk about.
Yeah. I have a long list.
Do you
enjoy them all?
Greg, do you remember when you were the youth pastor at Bellevue mm-hmm. Christian Center and we used to do the ADD news and it was in the Scarred era where MTV had that show Scarred and like every week we were showing some compound fracture. We're showing teenage kids bones coming out of
all change.
Yeah, it's crazy. I can't believe the stuff we did.
You know, I think there's a whole podcast in the future. And you know, there's some injuries in the Bible that are going to be worth talking about that we got to bring Andy and Richard and just like let me moderate the Pastor Greg intern podcast for a day and just be like, okay, well, I'm those memories that you guys don't want to share to your congregations, I'm going to bring it up now because I was there behind the scenes and I saw you egging it on and just the little so but we don't want to give all of it away, right? I mean, that's going to be a future podcast.
Yeah. We got to build a relationship to whoever our audience is going to be.
That's right. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes. Don't want to scare anybody away. So I thought it would be fitting, since this is episode number one, I thought it would be fitting for each of us to share just briefly a little bit of our story, how you ended up on the end of a camera talking to me tonight, talking to each other, like how did we end up here? And then kind of what's your motivation for wanting to be a part of this podcast? So Eric, I would actually love for you to go first.
You know, youngest to oldest, you know. Well, I am the youngest on here, and a lot of our history is deeply entwined. I am Greg's son. Here's the thing, is that we're all stocky, you know, kind of squinty-eyed, you know, broad-shouldered white guys. So it was a, you know, a toss of a coin whether I was going to be Ryan's brother or Greg's son. It was going to be one of those. But so I am Greg's son, and I've grown up in church my entire life. Definitely had one of those moments that I think every church pastor's kid has, which is I'm going to be a pastor and I'm going to do that, followed by just a whole, you know, pendulum swing the other way. And just going, you know what, I'm not even going to do the whole church thing. I'm not sure about that. And it was a really cool thing after high school and after a discipleship program of just finding that God is my God. This is who he is for me. Ended up going down to Southwest Florida to really figure out if pastoral ministry is something I wanted to do. You know, I am a big believer that ministry looks like a lot of different ways. And so I could have been a tattoo artist and been in ministry, or I could have done that. But I just wanted to know if pastoring was it. Fell in love with both the business, creative, but also just the passionate side, especially diving into God's word. And it became more alive for me just in that season. Met my wife, moved up to Omaha, started working at a church with Greg called the Market Church, a church plant that you guys were a couple years in already. And then from that, I've just been pastoring all over Omaha. And right now I am, my wife and I, we planted a church 2.5 years ago in downtown Omaha called Dwell Church. We're the lead pastors there. And man, it's one of my favorite things that we've ever gotten to do. One of the most challenging things, but one of the best things is that we get to share our passion for the word and for God's people and how those intertwine. And so that's kind of where I am. I've known Ryan since I was in high school. He was my youth leader. And then friend, and then I've just been an admirer from the distance as he's gone around. So, but that's me.
Thanks for sharing, man. Yeah. What's kind of your motivation for wanting to be a part of this podcast?
Fame, money,
getting rich. Get rich, trying, right?
You know what? I've always kind of looked for, especially when you're doing like sermon writing, you always have to, or I guess you don't have to, but what I try to do is have the new believer in mind. Somebody who is, so there's a lot of explanation of, okay, here's this book of the Bible. This is the context of this. Here's this person. I'm really excited about some of the deep dive that we might be able to do, that there is some explanation. Hey, here's where this is coming from, but going a little deeper in those contextual things, those cultural things that end up for me, make it more than just Aesop's fables. And it actually is a living, breathing word. It is that rhema, you know, that where it becomes something alive. Yeah. And so we have a ton of people in our congregation, a lot of new believers that they're like, oh, reading the Bible is just so hard. And I'm like, yeah, it is until it isn't. And mm-hmm. and so
yeah,
I think a story like the podcast, like the Odd Testament, really opens up the door for us to go, all right, there's fun in this. There's poetry, yeah, there's history, yeah, there's all this stuff. And I love that. And so I can't wait to just pull that out, pull out the controversy, see where we can go and where the truth is and all of that.
Yeah. 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 That's great. That's great. I love it. Greg, what about you?
Yeah. Youngest to oldest. my background, became a Christian during the first Gulf War. So forever ago, you read about it in history books. so we went over on steamships, and that's a joke, but anyway, oh, there's no audience to give me feedback.
I'm not that's sure right. It's gonna work for
me. I have had audiences like that, if they called audiences congregations, but anyway, I can say that we did use one of the first GPSs, maybe not at least the first out, and so it was ridiculously difficult to use. You had to stop and actually and I was too, I didn't have enough rank to actually touch it, but yeah, so anyway, random piece of information there, but we had twins at that time. My wife and I were married really young, and so one of those twins was Eric, and I actually left, got deployed when he was 2 weeks old and came back a believer, and that's a long story, but went to school out of the Army, or got out of the Army, went to school, and right around the time that I became a Christian, I really had a sense that I wanted to do ministry. I really didn't know what that was. I grew up a bunch of different things, and so that's a much longer story that's also interesting, but let's let it unfold over more episodes than now, but knew I wanted to be in ministry, was kind of trying to see if there's a way around that, and really discovered that, man, this is what I wanted to do. And so I took a youth pastorate, was choosing between seminary and something that had an opportunity to be a youth pastor. And my wife and I really felt like that's what we were supposed to do. So we stayed there in Macomb, Illinois, did our first youth pastorate. And Eric remembers a little bit of that. And then, man, we moved to Chicago. That was failed attempt at anything. Then Utah for a while, and youth pastored out there. Then moved to Nebraska, youth pastor here for a while, and then planted a church in downtown Omaha also, which was just one of the best experiences ever. But we discovered that you do need money to operate. And I know who thought, but I still love an idealistic point of view on ministry, even though I know it doesn't entirely function without, you know, support. But I still just dream of that. I love being idealistic, and that is what I am. So I think my point of view is probably the thing that people may be interested in me. I have said for years that I'm not that great of a speaker, but I'm a decent thinker, and so I just tell you what I'm thinking about and how I got there. That's not to say I'm not a good speaker. I'm so good.
you are very good. You're being sarcastic, but you are good.
So yeah. I appreciate that. my background is in philosophy, and then did a master's in context of the Bible. That was just a joy, and leadership in context, where you're at. And so by context, I mean, if I'm talking about context of the Bible, I'm talking about what was going on when this thing was written. What did the original author intend? How would the original readers have heard it? And what were the elements involved? And so none of those can, we're not there, so we can't be like 100%, but to zone in some, and just really helps in comprehension. It creates I'm going to use the word empathy, but also sympathy. It creates a number of things, and among that, to really put yourself in that, and it helps with some understanding of some difficult passages. And so that said, I why the podcast, bluntly, because Ryan asked me, and I don't mean that as a joke. The way I said it, it's funny, but I mean it like, man, I just love hanging out and talking about this stuff. So he said, hey, can we just do a call and just talk about stuff? I'd be like, heck yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
To do it on purpose is just sound like a lot of fun. So I love questions. I love challenging things. And I love trying to work on something that even if you don't hit, like, this is it, to go, I think this at least works better than what I was thinking or what I have heard. So anyway, that's why I'm here, and I love it.
That's awesome. I don't know if you know this.
Go ahead.
I don't know if I ever told you this, Greg, but I actually credit you for teaching me critical thinking and teaching me how to think about not even just scripture, just anything. Cause I feel like before I met you, I was just kind of like, I felt like, I look back at it now, like, and I think like, man, I was a meathead, you know? So like, I credit you with teaching me how to think critically. So,
thank you. That's humbling. Yeah. Wow. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ryan, why do you want to do this podcast?
Let me share a little bit of my story first. So I didn't grow up in the church per se. I grew up with a Catholic background, but I went to church sporadically, and then like on Christmas and Easter, you know, like had an understanding that God existed, never really knew about relationship with him and that kind of thing. And the traditions in the Catholic Church were so deeply entrenched in everything they did that it's almost like the truth didn't matter. And so I'll come back to that in just a second. And so I didn't really have an understanding that God wanted to have a relationship with me, you know, that kind of thing. Kind of went crazy as a teenager. I found God at 18 years old, gave my life to him, decided I wanted to be a disciple and become like him. And so that's where kind of my discipleship journey started. I did Master's Commission, which is a discipleship training program, and felt the call to ministry there. But it wasn't like a normal, like, oh, you're going to be a pastor, Ryan. The calling I felt like God gave me was, I felt like he said, you got to help your generation know who I am. You got to help your generation know who I am. And so, and I felt like he's given me the freedom to do that however I saw fit. And I chose ministry. I chose full-time, you know, vocational ministry, but I don't feel like the vocation was the calling, if that makes sense. And so ever since that calling, when I was about 19 years old, I've been pursuing that and trying to get trained to do that. And so now I'm the lead pastor of a church in Milford, Delaware. And
is that a real place?
Quite the ride. Surprisingly, it is. I thought initially when going through the interview process 3 years ago, I thought I was being punked. Like, Delaware? Come on, who lives in Delaware? You know, but
that's not even a state.
Yeah. Come to find out, it was actually the first
Omaha,
state,
Nebraska, and I'm making
right.
fun of something.
Yes. So we're out here doing the lead pastor thing, and it's been one of the most challenging things I've ever done. It's been one of the coolest things I've ever done. That is part of the reason why I wanted to do this podcast. Being a lead pastor for 3 years now, I've noticed that my church is comprised of baby Christians who have been, you know, in faith less than a year, and then also people who've been Christians their entire life, like 50 years. And there's one thing they all have in common: biblical illiteracy, if that's even a word or phrase. They don't know the Bible. Doesn't matter how long they've been in faith, they don't know the Bible. And that breaks my heart, because the Bible, I believe, is how we get to know God best. And so that's a part of my motivation. Another part of my motivation is I'm a podcast junkie. I love listening to podcasts. And there are a few podcasts that I really listen to that I like, but when they start getting into theological stuff, I'm like, I don't think that's right. But they have like these huge audiences, and I'm like, you're leading people astray. Shut up, you know? And so kind of part of the motivation is like, I want to get accurate. I don't know. I don't even know if accurate is the right word, because that makes it sound like I have the right view and nobody else does. But I want to get biblical views out there that stay true to the Bible. And I know you love that term biblical, Greg.
I think it's a word. I just wish it wasn't used as an adjective for so many things.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. To go back to the tradition thing that I was talking about, kind of one of my monikers, one of my personal monikers is I value truth over tradition. Means like I'm going to pursue truth over tradition 8 days a week, 10 out of 10 times. You know what I mean? Like, not that there's not truth in tradition, but I think sometimes we can become so steeped in tradition that we overlook the truth. So that's the main part of my motivation for this is I am interested in the truth more than tradition. And so that's what I'm hoping. Weird.
Yeah. I think it gets weird when we, mix the two up when we're trying to, I have this imagination that if we're doing theology, maybe we're trying to do good work. But I think maybe we lean on the work someone else did at that time. And so now we have tradition invading. We've made theology at one point tradition. And so this is how we think. And I'm like, can you, I get that, but I don't know. If you're going to defend it, then you defend it. And it doesn't mean no one's doing this work. That's not what I'm saying. But without thinking about it, without allowing it to challenge, as opposed to communion as a tradition, and that there are practices we do and those being tradition, but to allow, if there's ever a point at which we allow our thinking to become traditional, and only that's where I'm like, come on, let's do work. And at least if you're going to keep the tradition, great, make it justified, do the work that you can tell me why, because evangelize me. If I'm gonna verb that. So anyway, sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's good. That's right on. And it's interesting whenever I have conversations with people about this, they're kind of like, what do you mean truth over tradition? And so I always give the example of like the Lutheran denomination was established, I think, like 1400s, 1500s, somewhere around there, right? Like mid-teens century. And it was established based on an understanding of scripture at that time. But then you think about something, you think about the fact that archaeology was invented in the early to mid 1800s, and archaeology has changed the way we interpret the Bible because it's given us so much new information about that world. And so once you get new information, you have to be able to change your interpretation. You have to. But the Lutheran, and there's nothing wrong with Lutherans, I'm not saying that. So we probably just lost a whole bunch of Lutherans.
Yeah, to our Lutheran friends listening.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that.
We got Catholics, we got Lutherans.
Yeah. I'm just using it as an example. Yeah, like
no.
Their doctrine, there's, you know, has been so set for so long that new information, they don't allow new information to change their thinking. And so that's kind of the example I give. And that's borderline, that's really close to being a Pharisee. And I'm not, again, not calling Lutherans Pharisees. I'm saying like, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be so steeped in my tradition that I become like a Pharisee, that I'm not willing to see the truth when it's right in front of my face. So, that's kind of my motivation
it's important, like even in that topic, obviously Ryan, you had the best intro because we wanted to talk about it the most, but, it's all pathways. It's what is the purpose of the tradition? Is it to do the tradition or is it to lead us to the place of truth? So if you're doing the tradition and it gets you to the avenue of truth, assuming that the rest of your life was in an avenue not of truth. Yeah. Why do a salvation prayer? Well, is it because the prayer saves you? No, it's because it puts you on the avenue of truth, which is that Jesus loves you and he's your savior. So if you could take communion, if you could take any of those practices and not do them just for the sake of the ritual, like that's great. Rhythms are great. Rituals are great. Practices are great. But without them, that's habits, not truth. Like it doesn't get you to that extra step. And it's very, very tempting because it's easy to put a tangible thing onto your relationship with God when you go, I face this way, I pray at this time, and I do this, and you can go, and now I have an evidential proof right in my physical time that this is working, that this is God. And it's like, yes, but it was that you got to the place of God, not that was God. And so I think that's, dude, that's a nail on the head as far as I think the right identification for so many Christians right now is like, yes, that is the good thing, but then and what? You know, what is that extra thing where this becomes personal? You know, we do communion at our house once a month, and then our favorite one is on the Easter time where we get to celebrate the Last Supper. And sometimes we don't have wine and juice, but what we got is we got Cheez-Its and we got Sunny D. So it breaks all tradition, but the truth that I want my kids to know is this is what we got, and we're going to honor the moment that we can. And so that's the, I don't know, thousand things we're going to keep talking about, but I love that whole point.
I've been really
good, man.
Kind of add with it. I've been for a couple of years now, really on the idea of community, and that, within community, and then I have a book that I have a stack that I want to read. Among them is that I'm halfway through is about ritual and the fact that we do ritual, and that ritual isn't bad. I still wouldn't call it bad, but if we're within this conversation or style of conversation, it would be that if ritual lacks life, it actually then doesn't mean that the ritual is necessarily wrong. It may need some adjusting, but is the ritual doing the original work that we needed it to, which is something close to what Eric was talking about. But that within community, that we there are some of these things that we may rediscover the life that is within a traditional action or traditional ritual. And by ritual, hopefully, I'm just saying a repeated act that we gain meaning or has meaning to it. Or I guess it doesn't even have to. You're brushing your teeth may be a ritual for you, according to this author. Drew Johnson, Dr. Drew, I'm pretty sure Johnson's last name.
Is it Human Rights?
Yes.
I have that book. I'm slowly reading my way through it.
Yeah. So within community, though, these things have life. I think in our tradition that we've worked together in, I think we may over individualize bunches of challenges there. I think the individual, am I connecting to God? Yes. Alongside, are we connecting with God? And I think all that comes together. So anyway, it's just interesting stuff and I love it.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, along the lines of communion, that's kind of along the lines of what I wanted to talk about tonight as far as scripture. So I don't think we mentioned it when we started. Kind of the focus of this podcast is going to be to jump into weird stories in the Bible that maybe there's weird interpretations around or misinterpretations or maybe even no interpretations, and maybe try to figure out like how are these weird, bad, no interpretations shaping our worldview? How should we see them? That kind of thing. And so you guys brought up communion, and that's right along the lines of what I wanted to talk about. So do you guys mind if we jump in?
Let's go.
So I've been studying John chapter 6 in our church. We're doing verse by verse through the Gospel of John. And we're in John chapter 6 right now. And Jesus just got done feeding the thousands of people with 5 loaves and 2 fish. And then after that, he walked on the water and he was going to pass by his disciples and, you know, all that good stuff. And then it comes to this part afterwards where the crowd, this crowd of people, new followers, they find Jesus and they're like, "Where were you at?" And Jesus immediately, he doesn't even answer their question. He's like, "You don't want to follow me because I'm the Son of God. You want to follow me because I fed you." And they're like, "Hey," you know, kind of like, "Whoa," you know, that kind of thing. And so he just starts going in on them and he starts talking about the bread of life. And in verse 47, 6:47, he says that Jesus says this, "I tell you the truth, anyone who believes has eternal life. Yes, I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they all died. Anyone who eats the bread from heaven, however, will never die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Anyone who eats this bread will live forever. And this bread, which I will offer so the world may live, is my flesh." Hard left turn. So Jesus goes from this inspiring, doing miracles and multiplying the loaves and the fish and feeding people and walking on water to, "Hey, eat me," you know? that's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
And people are like, and then verse 52, it says, they began arguing with each other about what he meant. "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" they asked. So Jesus, again, to make it abundantly clear what he was trying to say. So again, Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you cannot have eternal life." Like, so what the heck is going on? You know, it goes on to say that these disciples, it was too difficult for them to accept, and many of them left, you know, that kind of thing. And I just think that's a passage that a lot of people, they don't understand or they misinterpret. A lot of people, like, is he prescribing cannibalism? That's really weird. And they use it to like downplay or, you know, Christianity, or talk bad about Christianity. And then other people are like, no, he's talking metaphorically about the sacraments, you know, the communion bread and the communion wine. But I think there's something else going on. But before, like, a dive into like what I've been reading, studying, I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think you're right to be, I don't have a total answer on it because I'm first thinking about it, but one, John writes weird, and so like purposefully complicated. And so he seems to just love these metaphors without explaining them. And I'm kind of like, did you have to do it that hard? You know, but it's also so poetic. You go to John 1:1, and in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, the Word was God. It's got this almost hip hop kind of cadence to it. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing that was made has been made. So that'll be our next thing as we record that as a
put a Hamilton beat underneath it.
I'm thinking more Murdergram.
So
just, as long as you auto-tune it, it'll sound awesome.
That'll be it. So, I think one of the things I come into reading something like this, and I go, okay, what book am I reading? I'm reading John. So it's going to be a little weird, and that's okay. What can I do in this group? And I think Ryan did a good job of pointing out that this is a larger section. It's not just one verse that I go, eat flesh, okay? or eat me, you know, which is totally different, seems. Recognizing then some of these, how many different metaphors he's using at the same time. But he's not switching metaphor groups, though, if that makes sense, that he's talking about this food, he's talking about his flesh and his blood. A switch to a different metaphor group, I'm just making up a term there with group, but would be if he switches to this to saying, consider the frogs or something like that, which he doesn't do. I'm just making one up. That's a switch in metaphor usage. So he's not switching there. So he's got to be saying something We also look at this and go, Jesus isn't crazy, as far as we can tell. So what he's saying has to make some sense. If I'm not getting it, then there's more work that I can do. So then I go to people like you're talking about that some of the original pushback against Christians, so in the first century, is that they were cannibals. Without any proof, this type of thing would be said, oh, this is what they do. And people do this today in the sense that we hear stories, rumors, and we run with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not new stuff. When we hear craziness, part of our job is to be sensible enough to go, well, that's crazy. So let's, even if you think, it's crazy, but I got to allow possibility of crazy. Great. You could put it on the list, but it's not going to be like the top thing that you're going to, if you can't figure anything out, you go, oh, clearly cannibalism, nothing else made sense. So finally, thing I'll say is that, I think as you, Ryan, pointed out, what I hear from you is that I've heard different people explain this, but they don't resolve it. I don't feel comfortable with the end. And if the end is, we don't quite know, I actually feel more comfortable with that than I do with, oh, he's talking about the sacraments and stuff like that. You mean he was talking about the things no one invented until 100 years after this
right.
thing, or especially conceptualize the way we've made it up, then I don't think he's talking about that either. So what maybe there's something substantial here, or maybe it's him just saying, look, you have to participate in me, to the degree that it is that flesh and blood, that this is the level at which you have to engage and encounter. What I'm teaching has to be devoured, ingested. It has to become a part of who you are. I mean, maybe that's something close to that. But anyway,
specifically in the book of John, we see a ton of like times where those phrases. I mean, I'm even just thinking Nicodemus having this very confusing conversation of born again. You know, which is only just a couple chapters earlier than this. And so I think the way that John portrays Jesus's teachings in particular, what seems different than the other versus synoptic gospels then is he starts like throwing out these things, and then he says it, sometimes just drops it, and then sometimes the reaction that he gets from the crowd, it's almost like a comedian doubling down on a bad joke. So, you know, he's like, so he's like, you got to eat my flesh. And everybody's like, murmur, murmur, murmur. And then he goes, and drink my blood. Like, and he just goes a little bit extra. You know, like, I think the more that you can kind of like, I don't know, I like reading Jesus with a little sarcasm, and that's probably just my own perspective sometimes. But especially like this story, and when like he's the king of foreshadowing, he's this brilliant communicator, and is able to look ahead and understand some of the mission that he's on and the rhythms that are going to be a part of this, and so, man, what a brilliant communicator and sign of his divinity that he's able to have this one little moment, and then what we would read chapters later, which ends up being, you know, at least a year, maybe like a couple years later within this, he's sitting at a table reiterating the conversation. Can you imagine the deja vu that these disciples are having of, and then now you want us to go do this for others. Okay. You needed to open up the conversation. I needed to go on the journey of discovering that. Then when I encountered it again, there's this, I think that's one of the beautiful things that the Bible does get to open up. And this story, I think, kind of highlights a little bit of, without trying to like overanalyze it, but that, okay, read it for what it is, take it in, and then continue and come back. And often the Bible is going to lead you back to that place again, especially if you're trying to find Jesus within it. And I mean, when we talk about even like the, you know, the context within this, you know, trying to find like keywords within this, like looking at who's his audience, who's he, you know, what is he trying to portray here? Is he talking to people who have no experience with Jewish culture at all? No, he's talking to primarily Jews here. Who have converted. There might be some, you know, Gentiles within this, but
well, he's in a synagogue in Capernaum.
Oh, correct. Yeah. Yeah. And so he's, and so he goes, hey, yeah, your ancestors did this type of bread and you have an understanding of this. Now here's this bigger thing. Yes. Here's, let me reframe all this stuff. Let me be the fulfilling of the law here. There's a to even like the practice of like, is this literally, you know, when you partake in communion, are you literally eating the flesh of Jesus and drinking it, there's a part, I don't know about you guys. Maybe this is just still me young, you know, in my pastor journey, and especially lead pastoring journey, where I'm like, if that gets you to the truth, fine. Yep. the point in which it has to be, we're messing with something. If it has to be that, anything but that this brought us to Jesus. That I like the way that you said it, Dad. It was the I need you to take full part of me. Mm-hmm. That was the purpose, you know? And so just even entering into this, like when we're talking about the Bible, we're not just trying to consume parts, we're trying to take in the whole part of it, of what this can mean for us. I think this is a really powerful word that ends up just messing with people's heads completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. All really good thoughts, guys. And you guys, you know, probably, I mean, you guys both said having not studied or having not really, you know, knowing fully, like you guys are like, right. You guys are like right on. So I've studied this a little bit. I've studied this a little bit and one of the resources I love using to study scripture is the Jewish New Testament commentary, written by David H. Stern. He's a Messianic Jew, and I think it's really important to understand the Jewish point of view because our roots as Christians is in Judaism. Mm-hmm. And if we don't understand our roots, then we're not going to fully understand what we're doing. And so I'm a huge proponent for understanding Jewish way of life and understanding the Jewish way of thinking and that kind of thing. And so I abuse my Jewish New Testament commentary almost daily to try to figure out what's going on in these scriptures. And one of the things he says in particular with this passage is it's an idiom. Eat my flesh, drink my blood is a religious idiom. Mm-hmm. And these people didn't understand the religious idiom. And so the idiom is eating and drinking has to do with the Tanakh, the scripture, mm-hmm. and drinking has to do with good works. And mm-hmm. so whenever there's a reference by a rabbi in the Midrash or something, you know, in the Old Testament, mm-hmm. about eating and drinking, so Lamentations, eat, drink, and be merry. It's not talking about eating food and drinking wine. It's talking mm-hmm. about take in my word and do my works.
That's so good.
You know what I mean? And so it's this metaphor. And so they didn't get it. And so Jesus is using this idiom and he kind of changes it a little bit and personalizes it. Eat my flesh, drink my blood. And what he's saying is absorb my way of life completely. Mm-hmm. Everything I do, I want you to do. If you're going to follow me, everything I do, I want you to do. Mm. Everything I, my way of thinking, absorb it. My way of living, absorb it. My way of being, existing, absorb it. Mm. Spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally, you know, absorb me, you know. So like you guys are right on. You didn't even study. Good job, guys.
We just, this wisdom just, I... Everything's inappropriate. So
man, no, I love that. I just love when you that I feel like that's, man, that's gonna be my prayer time this week. Mm-hmm. that the kind of the deep cuts that are within this. And man, how do you even know that without, like, how many books did you have to read to get to the Jewish commentary, you know, in, mm-hmm. in your study? I'm really excited to be able to open up some of these ideas to people, like, because now when you rediscover these things over and over again, man, the life that could bring to your reading, man, that's going to be really, really powerful. It is for me, yeah. man. That yeah. was awesome. Thank you for bringing that.
Yeah.
And I'd say for anyone who's listening, this doesn't mean whatever we're talking about, we're doing work where what we're aware of is that there could be answers to what we're looking at, or at least information. And mm-hmm. so, man, we're going to serve up some stuff that, you know, we're going to feel, you're going to notice in our comment, the way we talk, our level of confidence is pretty high about something. Then other times we're going to go, you know what? I think these are the questions involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's equally so valuable. So, man, a listener may also have more information than we currently do. Man, good. Do it. You know, let mm-hmm. us know and all that. So I just want to encourage engagement. But one of the things we're talking about here is just simply doing the work. If you haven't yeah. got the answer that fits, then do the work. And I'm not talking about I'm talking about when you are genuinely doing good critical thinking that Ryan talked about, and you haven't hit a resolution, whether mm-hmm. where I'm not just talking you found the answer you want to agree with, you hit a question, well, what does he mean? And mm-hmm. and the answers the surface answers you're getting, or the maybe off the cuff, are just, you know, like, I just feel like if something's deeper, man, then keep going and do the work.
I'm interested, and Ryan, I don't know if this is where you're going to be going with the conversation, but the intro to him even bringing the story up is him rebuking it a little bit. Oh, you just want food, but you need to do this. And although he does have some explanation in this, like, both, like, I'm interested in your guys' perspective. Like, there was a very kind of get up and follow me kind of attitude that Jesus had. As he was gathering followers within this. So he goes, okay, now take part of my life. Let's assume some of the people understood that and got that and went, okay, cool, I got this. What did that look like for them? How do we apply that now? Where Jesus is still asking us, eat my flesh, drink my blood.
Yes.
Well, it's 2025, and now we have all this greater understanding. We could get all this information, but he's still asking us the same question. Will you drink, you know, will you eat my flesh? Will you drink my blood? Nice. What do we do with that?
Awesome.
Mm.
I think it's the same. Yeah. Whatever. And I think it's greater because whatever ideas are going to have to answer that question too. Mm-hmm. You know, if he asked, hey, where do I go find water any minute? Literally, we don't have to ask that to ourselves because he's asking, mm-hmm. you know, but if this kind of thing, we go, well, what if I'm in the crowd? Because mm-hmm. this is written, I am in the crowd. What's he calling? What's he, you know? And some of it we think of metaphorically, and then the others, I think, becomes very practical. What are we going to do today? What are we going to do tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really answering the question other than just hopefully giving some
clarification. I mean, it's a loaded question, you know. Yeah. I mean, we're not that we're going to encapsulate like all of the things, but I mean, some of the first step for me, and we've referenced it a little bit in like even just telling the story, but just in engaging the Bible in general is this isn't a textbook in which you get information and expand your mind. Mm-hmm. And this isn't like, although, you know, write the word on your heart, you know, and have it as something that you can combat the enemy when he comes up against you. But now do something. You know, we try to, at the end of our services at Dwell, we try to create what we call a decision moment, where it's just like, make a decision today. Maybe that decision is just, I'm going to be aware of Jesus in my life. Great. If we wrote our message properly for those who have already been on that journey, now what? Like, could you go be kinder and gentler, not just because that's the morally good thing, but this is actually what it would mean to eat his flesh and drink his blood, is to consume him in all areas of our life, that I would have to put the mirror of my parenting up to the flesh of Jesus, to the, what am I drinking? What am I eating? What are my actions? Am I taking his word? And, you know, I think something that's always really practical is just the, when you're reading the Bible, just like we said it, which is like, okay, what is it saying? Who's it saying to? Now, how is it saying? What is it saying to me right now in my context? John Mark Comer, in his book, Practicing the Way, he says, what would Jesus do was kind of like this crazy 90s, you know, early 2000s thing. Everybody had the bracelet with the, you know, and all that type of stuff. And he goes, we called it cheesy. It got as cheesy as like the Live Strong bracelets and all that stuff. And almost cheesier than the Jesus Fish bumper sticker. He goes, but if I can challenge maybe some of our perspective on where we're going, he says, what would Jesus do if he were me? You know, none of us are, you know, rabbi, 33-year-old rabbis in the Middle East, and you know, in this ancient time, but we are living right now. So Jesus would be more kind. He would call people to a better way of life, not out of judgment, but out of love. And so I don't know. I'm thinking of like the, you know, the single mom, or just the person on their drive right now to work, just trying to figure out, what am I even doing? What am I like? If I could challenge Jesus' call right here, wasn't trying to push people away. It was actually to give them to a higher place. Yeah, he will feed you. He'll give you the resources. If you need food, here's food. You need a blessing, here's a blessing. You need a healing, here's a healing. But the life after this, where you just had one act of Jesus in your life today, what does that look like? Well, maybe your coworker, we can all see the weight of a weekend on a coworker's face. Like, going up to them and saying, hey, how you doing? And not trying to fix life, but just listen. Man, I think this is the stuff that Jesus is talking about, in engaging your whole life. Can you slow it down for the one person, you know?
Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. I think about it in terms of compartmentalization, right? Mm-hmm. I think men are really easy at compartmentalizing. Here I got my church life, here I got my work life, here I got my family, and I got my hobbies over here. And we're able to put our lives into different compartments, to where they never really interact with each other.
Yeah.
And I see this as Jesus saying, I want to permeate it all.
Yeah.
I want to have a say in every part of your life.
Mm.
And I want to knock down the walls, and I don't want there, you know, like that's kind of what I see it as a call. I mean, essentially I'm just saying it differently than you did, Eric.
I'm seeing it
as a call to intimacy. He wants to know us better. He wants to know, you know, the person driving to work at 6 a.m. He wants to know you better, you know, the person who's, you know, mopping floors, where, you know, whatever, like he wants to know you better. And I see this as a call to that, you know, so
love that. That's great.
Yeah.
I've been doing probably the idea of obedience and what that means. I think what Eric's talking about is really practical. I tend to be theoretical. So I really appreciate that practical side. So I think that question still is there for each person. But I think this call is to genuine commitment, the type of that there's an ongoing conversation or idea about a covenant and covenant loyalty, that when we can read the Old Testament and it's not disengaged from the New Testament. The New Testament is best understood. I'm not saying you can't engage it at all without this, but if you're trying to get real understanding, you have to include the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, into this thing. Again, I don't want to be elitist here, but I do want to continue to challenge myself and everyone around me to say, let's do really good Bible. One of my little phrases is to do better Bible. That began with don't do bad Bible. The don't do has a kind of flow to it that I still kind of like, but anyway, this is a call to If we're going to ingest what he's taught, what he's teaching, then it's ingesting that call to that what Eric was also talking about, the really what we think of as the fruit of the Spirit. We kind of categorize these because they're nice and tight, they're condensed and stuff like that. But I heard someone speaking the other day, and they're like, what is the proof of the Holy Spirit working in your life? And what they were going for is a Pentecostal doctrine thing. But I leaned over to a friend of mine, you guys know Richard Nakai, and we're at this meeting, and I said, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. I think these are the evidences of the Spirit of God active in our lives. And you know, everything else is great and fun, but we have in this passage, we see people that were amazed by the miracle and excited by the miracle, and specifically because I fed you or something. But it's cool to see the fancy things and the, you know, the exciting things, the things we call blessing. I'm particularly, and have been for a long time, interested in what God calls blessing. I want to want those things. Sometimes I may not, but that's part of this is, what does it mean for me to ingest this? It's going to mean for me to, we'll read further. Is this a real question? And by a real question, am I willing to try and work on it? Cause there's questions where you go, this and this and this. Great.
Yeah.
Which one are you going to pick to work on? And you go, well, none of them. Okay. Then which is all, I'm not worried about that either.
Yeah.
Just don't act like you're thinking. you may have, I'm not, that's a little worried, but, you know, just come on. Anyone can be a critic. Anyone can bring stuff up. That's awesome. Yeah. It doesn't mean you're a intellectual powerhouse, and I'm not claiming I am. I'm simply saying the mark of it to me is the humility that says, I have a question. Let me go work on it. Let me try to solve this. Let me go to the people that are, and what you'll hear from us is our work on trying to find people that are, we're going to bring up questions that we're just interested in, and we're going to use the work we've done. Doesn't mean we're going to come to the absolute conclusion, because some of these things are meant to be like we're doing today, where we go, there is no absolute locked in conclusion that solves this, because this is not a solvable. This isn't that type of question. It is what Eric was talking about. How do I this week ingest him and take him in, take his teaching, what at another place he calls his yoke, and put it and allow that to be put on us. He says it's easy and light. Understand that means you're probably going to have to change your entire idea of everything about
him.
Jesus himself is saying his teaching is easy and light. We may be doing it wrong. Just a possibility.
100%.
There's a joy to this that we can engage, and it involves ingesting him, not just looking at the shiny things, the exciting things, the, you know, whatever we count as blessing, but instead, God, man, let me be somebody who wants to be faithful in what we use the word relationship, but in a relationship that understands that you are it, I come under you.
Yeah.
And this defines everything.
I will probably need to wrap up, but I not to overly mix Jesus's metaphor right here, but I love the message, kind of interpretation of this that follows the story that you're bringing. It says, many among his disciples heard this and said, this is tough teaching, too tough to swallow. So those who are on the beginning journey of their faith, and just learning to, practice what it looks like to have a daily life, much less all of your life, but just beginning to incorporate that daily, as we all have experience as fathers here, you did not give your kids steak as their first meal. Why? It would be too tough to swallow. There's a lot that needs to go into this. So what you need to do is work your way up to the, and it's okay. You have to right size your expectations of how you're interacting with this and going, okay, I know there's something deeper here, but what can I do right now with the information? That is the soft, easy thing. What is right in my hands right now? I don't need to go looking for a new Bible. I don't need to start a new journal plan. I don't need a devotional. I don't need to consult a pastor. I just need to be like Jesus. What did he do? Well, he was never in a rush for people. Okay. Well, just if it's people involved, take your time. Like, if I can just encourage you, that is the easy thing to swallow. And what he's talking about, what Ryan, as you just said, like bringing Jesus all into your life, does he have your time? And he's always going to take your time and use it for people. It's never take your time and use it for frivolousness. It's never used for Netflix. It's never used for text messages. It's never used for any, it's used for playing with your kids. It's used for giving a friend a hug. It's used for those types of things. So if you need just a bite size, this feels a little too tough to swallow. Just understand it was too tough to swallow even back then. But that does not mean that we cannot work our way up to chewing on this well, eating this well, ingesting Jesus's entire life into who we are. You just got to take those little steps. So let God take control of your time today. Could you add 5 minutes into your prayer time, into your morning commute, and just bringing that to God? I think you'll see the dividends and you'll want more. You're going to go from eating bananas and strawberries to, I want that steak. I want that delicious meal. I want that five-star Michelin restaurant that the whole Bible does bring to the table, and we can have that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good, man. That's really good. Really good. I love that. Love that. Well, guys, is that a wrap on our first episode?
I think so.
Man, I love it. I love it. So good. All right. All right. We're going to wrap it up. I'm going to do my little outro thing. And then I actually have a did you know statistic that I wanted to end with. Let's and it doesn't, we don't need to discuss it. I just wanted to share. So, if you're enjoying the Odd Testament podcast, we'd love your support. The best way to help us to keep bringing you all this odd, inspiring, thought-provoking content is by showing us some love on social media. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube and all the things. So go like us, follow us, all that good stuff. Take a moment to review the podcast. Write us a review. Give us five stars. We're only interested in five stars. So if it's a one star podcast, just do five stars and then tell us that it's a one star in the review. That will get our attention more than anything. So do that. And your feedback helps us get the show out to more people. It helps more people discover the show. So don't forget to subscribe, notification bell, all those good things, so that you can get our content every time we're putting it out. We're going to be on every podcast platform, and we're going to be on YouTube and all the things. So follow us, do the things, help us out. So come on, you guys have any parting words before I give you the did you know?
I got nothing. God bless. Okay. It's gonna be a good week.
Okay, here's the did you know. Yes. Oh, you're muted.
Yeah. Of course I was. It's got to do that. My headphones just keep going out. We'll get this fixed. Anyway.
Okay.
The opposite side, or not really the opposite, but the further on with what Eric was saying is, so you're just engaging this. I go, if man, you're really engaging this, and or you're at the place where you're like, this Jesus stuff is hard, then the end of this is him looking at his disciples and going, are you guys going to go too? And Peter says this incredible response, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of life. He's not saying, look, I understood everything you just said, and I have it unlocked. So, but he goes, you're it. Even if I don't get it, I'm still following you. This is this is where mature Christians, I think, live, and it's all right, and it's so good. It's how we figure stuff out, and it's how we get closer. It's how we allow the challenges that Eric is able to say are still relevant to me today, because it's not, even if I understand different things, it's great, but it still comes down to, am I ingesting, am I allowing his life to infuse every area of it? And I just want to stay that type of engagement and stuff. So Anyway.
Yeah, that's good.
Sorry for my audio problems.
No, no, no. It's all good. True disciples have no plan B. That's what I'm getting out of it.
You like my giant cup, by the way? On podcast, you can't see it, but on the video, you can, my giant.
Yes, love it.
I love it.
Love it. All right, guys, my did you know, and then we can sign off. Did you know that 10% of all the photos that have ever been taken in human history have been taken in the last 12 months?
Nice.
Think about that. 10% of all the photos that have ever been taken in human history have been taken in the last year. It's wild. It's wild to me.
Ryan, so, you're going to learn over the years, I've become a little bit more of a conspiracy theorist. So
me too.
I just want you to know, I don't think that's by accident. You know, like they put a camera on our phone for a reason. Okay. Didn't need to be there, but they put it on her.
Big Kodak. Is
that's right. Big Kodak. Big picture. You see, big
state. No? It's not. I heard that 100% of all photos that have ever been taken have been since 1800.
Oh, gosh.
Just think about that, guys. I mean, what does that mean? You know what I'm saying? I mean, this should just, just unbelievable.
All right, I got
to
go.
All right, yeah, it's time for us to get out of here. Thank you guys for tuning in. We will catch you next time.
It was good.
See ya.
Have a good one. Thank you.